Ezekiel 47, verses 1 to 12 on page 734. Then he brought me to the door of the temple, and behold, water was issuing from below the threshold of the temple towards the east, for the temple faced east. The water was flowing down from below the south end of the threshold of the temple, south of the altar. Then he brought me out by way of the north gate and led me round on the outside to the outer gate that faces towards the east. And behold, the water was trickling out on the south side. Going on eastwards with a measuring line in his hand, the man measured 1,000 cubits and then led me through the water. And it was ankle deep. Again, he measured 1,000 and led me through the water, and it was knee deep. Again, he measured 1,000 and led me through the water, and it was waist deep. Again, he measured 1,000, and it was a river that I could not pass through, for the water had risen. It was deep enough to swim in, a river that could not be passed through. And he said to me, "Son of man, have you seen this?" Then he led me back to the bank of the river. As I went back, I saw on the bank of the river very many trees on one side and on the other. And he said to me, "This water flows towards the eastern region and goes down into the Arabah and enters the sea. When the water flows into the sea, the water will become fresh. And wherever the river goes, every living creature that swarms will live, and there will be very many fish. For this water goes there that the waters of the sea may become fresh, so everything will live where the river goes. Fishermen will stand beside the sea. From Engedi to Eneglaim, it will be a place for the spreading of nets. Its fish will be of very many kinds, like the fish of the great sea. But its swamps and marshes will not become fresh, there to be left for salt. And on the banks, on both sides of the river, there will grow all kinds of trees for food. Their leaves will not wither, nor their fruit fail, but they will bear fresh fruit every month, because the water for them flows from the sanctuary. Their fruit will be for food, and their leaves for healing." What a scene! It's a picture of abundant life flowing from the temple, flowing from God's presence. So shall we explore it in a bit of detail? It all begins at the east gate of the temple. There's this trickle of water, maybe just a tiny amount, flowing out of the east gate. That's where it begins. And in verse 3, this tour guide angel that I already mentioned makes Ezekiel follow this trickle of water. So maybe they're just paddling along in it together. And they follow it eastwards for 1,000 cubits. Now that's about half a kilometre, so maybe 5-10 minute stroll, something like that. And then the angel stops Ezekiel. And Ezekiel notices the water is a bit deeper. Ankle deep, it says in verse 3. So perhaps you can imagine Ezekiel taking his shoes and socks off, rolling his trousers up a bit. And they keep walking along what you'd now call a stream. And in verse 4, the same thing happens. After another half a kilometre, they stop. This time, the water is knee-deep. Ezekiel hitches his trousers up again. And they carry on again, wading eastwards through, would you call it a brook? And the water's getting pretty deep now. After another 1,000 cubits, end of verse 4, it's waist deep. Ezekiel is really wading. This is a serious river at this point. I think it's probably quite hard work actually getting through it. Maybe by this point, Ezekiel's just accepted he is just going to be wet. He's going to have to give up on his clothes. I picture him at this point instead beginning to really enjoy the coolness of wading through this water. Because remember, as Lance was helping us to think with the children's talk, this is a hot country. We're in the Mediterranean. And it says that the river is going east out of Jerusalem. Anyone know what's east of Jerusalem? That's correct. Not much. It's effectively desert. It's a wilderness east of Jerusalem. So the brook is heading off into the desert, and they've been walking for maybe 20, 25 minutes now in the hot desert sun. That's a serious thing. But you know how, I don't know if anyone's been on holiday recently to a hot country. You've been out and about in the dusty streets under the hot sun all day. There's nothing better than getting home and plunging into the cool pool at wherever you're staying. I reckon Ezekiel must be really loving this river. You can see him perhaps just slowly moving his arms around beneath the waves, or maybe luxuriating in the cooling effect of the water, dipping his face underneath perhaps. Then the tour guide angel makes him carry on one more time. They go another half a kilometer, and by this point it's too deep to stay in the water. Verse 5, it was a river that I could not pass through, for the water had risen. It was deep enough to swim in, a river that could not be passed through. So they swim to the bank, they clamber out, and Ezekiel suddenly notices that there are loads of trees on the riverbank. Verse 7, very many trees on one side and on the other. Now that's a bit strange. This is the desert. Where have all these trees come from? Ezekiel is probably beginning to realize by this point, if he hadn't already, that this water, this river, is pretty special. I mean, for a start, where is it all coming from? No river gets this deep this quickly in just 2 kilometers. I mean, it was just a trickle back at the temple, and there's been no sign of any tributaries. There's something unusual going on here. And now all these trees. To produce that many trees out here in the desert. Special water. But that's not the best bit. I think it's probably at this point that the tour guide angel says something that would have really blown Ezekiel's mind. So they sit down on the riverbank, and the angel explains where the river goes next. It's in verse 8. This water flows towards the eastern region and goes down into the Arabah and enters the sea. Now, the Arabah is desert, total wilderness, as we already said, and the sea that's next to the Arabah, or within it, that's the Dead Sea. And it's still there today, the Dead Sea. Some of you might have visited it. Anybody visited the Dead Sea? Quite a few. What's it like? It's dead and salty, I heard somebody say. Exactly. It's called the Dead Sea for good reason. It is completely dead. Nothing lives there. And the reason is it's very, very salty. Now, anyone scientifically orientated, it's got 10 times the salinity, saltiness, of your average saltwater ocean. Did you know that? That's very salty. That means quite a few good things. Firstly, you can float on it really easily because it's so dense. That's quite fun. Secondly, it's quite good for certain health treatments. And thirdly, it's really good for collecting salt, just generally. But it's really bad for one thing, life. So you don't get a single fish in the Dead Sea. They just can't survive. And if you happen to go swimming in the Dead Sea and accidentally have just a few swallows of the water, that's it. You're a goner. Apparently it would upset your electrolyte balance in your body, and you can't handle that. Apparently, actually, just last year, 10 people died swimming in the Dead Sea. But look at what the angel says in verse 8. When the water flows into the sea, the water will become fresh. That's amazing. This pretty sizable body of water that is famous for its saltiness becomes fresh water. Just like that. And I think it's even better in verses 9 and 10. Let me read those. The angel says, wherever the river goes, every living creature that swarms will live, and there will be very many fish. For this water goes there, that the waters of the sea may become fresh, so everything will live where the river goes. Fishermen will stand beside the sea. From Engedi to Eneglaim, it will be a place for the spreading of nets. Its fish will be of very many kinds, like the fish of the great sea. The Mediterranean Sea, that is. So not only does the Dead Sea become fresh water, it becomes full of life. Fish everywhere. Every species of fish you could think of, the whole place becomes a fishing destination. What was previously a dead, dangerous body of salt water in the middle of the desert, now a hub of life, abundant life. And then verse 11, puzzling verse, I think it's just saying there's no downside to the river, because salt does have some good uses, preserving food, medical functions. This incredible river doesn't completely get rid of all the salt from the Dead Sea. It leaves just enough so that life can not just exist, but really flourish. Now, remember, while the angel is saying all of this to Ezekiel, they're still sat on the banks of the river a few kilometres back, probably nicely settled in the shade of those trees. And lastly, in verse 12, the angel talks about those trees, and he says that they're fruit trees for eating. So Ezekiel looks up, and for the first time he notices these trees are absolutely laden with juicy, colourful, fresh fruit. And the angel says, "Ezekiel, do you think that's good? It's like this all year round." He says, "Every month they will bear. If you live around here, Ezekiel, you won't go hungry. And Ezekiel, did you see the leaves? See those? They're for healing. You need healing? These trees will do it. Perhaps you cut your knee or break your arm. Or maybe something deeper, diabetes or cancer. Or maybe somebody has anxiety or depression. Or could it be the healing of broken relationships, tensions in families, strife between nations? Whatever it is that needs healing, their fruit will serve for food and their leaves for healing." And that's where the scene ends. It's an incredible picture of life, abundant life, flowing from God's temple and transforming a whole landscape, a whole nation. And I want to acknowledge that, yes, the picture is metaphorical, like most of the pictures in Ezekiel. But even though it's metaphorical, it's still describing a true reality. The truth this picture is putting across to us is fullness of life, plentiful food and drink, constant refreshment, an idyllic environment, creation restored, and my favourite bit, the slowly building sense of joy and wonder as the river grows and grows. So do you like the picture? I actually looked at this passage with a friend recently, one-to-one, and he pointed out that I'd probably read verse 6 out wrong. So the bit where the angel sort of reacts to the vision of the river, I'd read it quite solemnly, like, "Son of man, have you seen this?" And he said, no, surely, James, it's more like this, "Son of man, have you seen this?" I think that basically sums it up. What an incredible picture. So an inspirational description of life flowing from God's temple. But what does it mean? Let's step back. Remember at the start I mentioned that this picture comes in the middle of a much longer vision, all about God coming back to live with his people again in a new temple. Now there's 7 whole chapters of that, preparation for God coming to live with us. And then you get Ezekiel 47, this picture of abundant life, which starts at the temple. So, what does all this mean? I think Ezekiel 47 is helping us make a connection between 2 things: abundant life and God's presence. Helping us connect those 2 things. So, the abundant life that this passage describes, that we've just been enjoying, it is like that because the water flows from the sanctuary, from the temple, because the water flows from God's presence. That is explicitly the connection that the angel makes in verse 12. He says, "The trees will bear fresh fruit every month because the water for them flows from the sanctuary." So this abundant, full, exciting life that we all crave, that we all need, it comes from being in God's presence. Or you could put it this way: to be in God's presence is to have abundant life. People tend to default to one end of a spectrum on this matter. When I describe the spectrum, you'll probably know instinctively which end you might be. So either you quite want the abundant life that God promises, particularly for our future, the blessings of heaven. You want that, but sometimes, if you're honest, you would sort of rather it didn't have to come with the presence of God. The life, the blessings, that stuff is great. Yes, please. But does God have to be there too? all the time? I mean, it's not quite that I want him to be gone altogether, but maybe it just seems like God being there might limit the fun we could have with this abundant life. Or you might be at the other end of the spectrum. You know that being with God in the new heavens and the new earth is the main thing that matters. And you're a bit nervous of letting that focus shift at all. So any mention of the blessings that God promises for that time, and immediately you're suspicious. We shouldn't just focus on the blessings. Or maybe, similarly, it sounds too good to be true. I'll be with God, sure, but would he really lavish physical blessings like this on someone like me? Could he do that? And so either way, you never really allow yourself to think about the abundant life that this passage describes, or to get excited by it. So do you know which end of the spectrum you default to? I think personally, for me, it would be the first one, wanting the abundant life, but not quite wanting God to be there the whole time. Now, I'm not saying I'm completely like that, by God's grace, but that would be my default position. And so this passage is so helpful for me, it blows my biases right out of the water, pun intended. I mean, imagine Ezekiel said to the tour guide angel, "Yeah, angel, this seems lovely, this wonderful vision. I'd really like to live here, please, if you could arrange that. But I just have one tiny bit of feedback. Would it be possible to have these wonderful things in this scene without the river? I mean, all of the abundant life is great. I love that. I just think I'd prefer it if it was disconnected from the temple. So, yeah, no river, please." I mean, that would be outrageously rude, for one thing. And ridiculous for another, because none of this picture works without the river. The connection with the temple and with God's presence is the whole point. And I think this helps anyone on the other end of the spectrum too, and maybe some of you are at that end. I suspect Ezekiel may have been actually as a priest. This picture shows us that to be in God's presence is to have abundant life. The angel is at pains to show that. "Son of man, do you see this?" Imagine Ezekiel saying, "Yeah, I have seen this, thank you. But angel, look, can we be realistic? In reality, life is terrible. Life is disappointment. Life is exile in Babylon. So this is a really nice picture, angel. I did enjoy it, don't get me wrong. But I don't want to be disappointed again. So I'm just going to set my sights on something slightly more realistic, if that's okay. God's presence in the temple, I can visualize that. Doctrinally, happy with that. But the life, well, how about we keep the river a bit smaller? Knee deep, perhaps. And we need to get rid of the fish, definitely. And let's just make some of the trees bear fruit only once a year. I mean, come on. Ezekiel says that. I think the angel probably takes one look at him and pushes him in the river. God is promising life to the full here. Life that is abundant, idyllic, plentiful, restored, at one with creation, growing and increasing. And surely it is reasonable to expect that. If the creator and designer and sustainer of all life moves in next door. So if you're at that end of the spectrum, can I say, feel free to let your imagination run wild, because abundant life means abundant life for you. As we come towards the end, 600 years after Ezekiel saw this vision, under another scorching Mediterranean midday sun, a Jewish man meets a Samaritan lady at a well. "Give me a drink," he says. "Who, me?" she says. And the man, we know it's Jesus, replies, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that is saying to you, give me a drink, you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water. It's the passage we thought about with the children earlier, and it's Ezekiel 47 language, isn't it? Jesus is saying, you're not just chatting to some Jewish man, you're speaking to God himself. You're in the presence of God, and that means there is a river of living water flowing from me. Only ask, and abundant life can be yours, even now in this life. Isn't that incredible? Now, Jesus is not saying that all of the physical blessings begin immediately in this life, but spiritually, abundant life does seem to begin, Jesus says here, as soon as you receive Jesus. His Spirit enters you. You know forgiveness. You know peace with God. You live with purpose and love and freedom. The conversation continues because Jesus has more to say. Whoever drinks of the water that I will give him will never be thirsty again. The water that I will give him will become in him a spring of water welling up to eternal life. Welling up. I think it's that river again, beginning with a tiny trickle, ankle deep, knee deep, waist deep, a vast and mighty river. Jesus is saying, I can make that river well up inside of you. And it will never stop growing for all eternity. The water that I will give him will become in him a spring of water welling up to eternal life. And if you're here this morning and you haven't yet put your trust in Jesus, there might be one or two, he is offering you this abundant life today. He's talking about life with your Creator, true life, full life. It's on offer. Will you take it? And this life, it really will continue to well up. And one day, we will all experience it fully, those of us who have begun to taste it now. And not just spiritually, in this future, we will experience it physically in the new heavens and the new earth. It gets picked up in the last chapter of the Bible. Did you know that? In Revelation 22, John writes, then the angel showed me the river of the water of life, bright as crystal, flowing from the throne of God and of the Lamb through the middle of the street of the city. Also, on either side of the river, the tree of life with its 12 kinds of fruit, yielding its fruit each month. The leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations. That's brilliant, isn't it? And so when we tell our loved ones, those we know, about Jesus, this is what we're offering. And could it be that even just one person in that eternal city sits with us on the banks of that river in the presence of God and says, you know, I'm so glad that you took the time to tell me about Jesus in 2019. That was the first time I tasted this living water. What an offer this is. Come and know Jesus. Come and drink the waters of eternal life.